Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. This week marks the one-year anniversary of the publication of my book, Meeting the Muse After Midlife, A Journey to Meaning, Creativity, and Joy. And I couldn't think of a better way to celebrate than with my friend, the painter, poet, writer, singer, and former science teacher at the Vashon Middle School, Gay Rozelle. Gay and I are going to talk about the book and what it is to live an engaging and creative life after midlife. And I'm so happy to be with her today. And to change things up a bit, Gay's going to ask me some questions as we talk about her experience of post-midlife creativity.
Your book has been amazing. I know it has impacted me greatly, and the timing of it has been great. I mean, each chapter, it's like, wow, that's exactly what I needed to hear at this time. So tell me, why did you write Meeting the Muse?
I wrote Meeting the Muse because I became fascinated with storytelling when I hit 60. And, you know, some of it was related to my career as a coach and consultant, because I felt like a lot of my clients needed to know how to tell a better story. They were just boring when they made presentations, and story brings things alive. But the more I went into story, the more I saw that it had different levels. And you have the story that you tell about your life or somebody else's life in the form of a novel or short story. But you also have the stories that you tell yourself about life. And there are big cultural narratives that I call stories, and they shape how we see the world. And one of those stories is the story about getting older, about aging, about going past 60, about retirement, and about life after retirement. Mm-hmm. And as I was edging to that mark of being 65, I thought, well, these stories really suck. Excuse my French. But it was like there wasn't anything that was life-giving about them. I mean, retirement, like disengage from the world? I don't think so. And in addition, I was self-employed, so it wasn't like any employer was going to give me a going-away party. But as I struggled with these questions, I thought, you know, I bet others struggle with them as well. And so I want to write a book about what I discover about what makes life meaningful after 60, really, 50, 60, 70 even. And I'll do it in the form of a story, and it will be my story.
And you're answering the next thing is why did you decide to write it as a memoir? And I hear you actually answering that question a little bit in the first question, but tell us more about that.
It was more complicated than that, because as a organizational consultant, I thought I was going to write a dandy self-help book. You know, that's what consultants do. They give you their 10 tips and they write it pretty easily, and then they sell it and use it to promote their business. You know, it's formulaic. But my book took me on a journey. And yes, I was learning a lot about aging and a lot about creativity, a lot about spiritual development. But the book asked me to put it in first person. And I had a lot of conversations with the book or with the muse about that, because I just didn't want to put myself center stage. I didn't think I was that interesting, you know? However, what I've learned is that for a lot of people, hearing somebody else's experience in the first person is a lot more interesting than hearing platitudes. And a lot of times in the particular, we find the universal. So I decided I would do it in my own particular voice.
So this amazing title of the book, Sally, Meeting the Muse After Midlife, A Journey to Meaning, Creativity, and Joy. I mean, that by itself just struck me and touched my heart. And the muse, I mean, I really have a sense of what you mean by the muse, and you shared some beautiful examples, but maybe you could tell the audience about what do you mean by the muse?
I wish that were an easy question. It's actually one of the most difficult because that title came to me almost immediately when I was writing the book. And I was talking to a muse. And that muse for me took the form of a sort of personified entity. In my case, she felt a lot like a distinguished, older, loving British lady, about 85. And I tell the story in the book. I won't go through it all here, but I would sit in my writer's chair and have my computer ready and think of a question I'd want to ask her and just type out whatever came through. And it was rich and it was generous and it was compassionate and it just felt like the biggest gift. And I was definitely grateful and very much in love with this older woman I called Isabel. So that's my particular variant. On the other hand, it's a little weird, and I didn't want to tell people, you've all got to go out and have an imaginary friend. You know, it's kind of like in grade school, you got to have your imaginary friend or your spiritual presence or an entity or a channel. I mean, people go all sorts of places with this thing. However, what I came to think about as the most essential about the muse was the connection that you had with the deep spirit inside of yourself. So when I talked to Isabel, what she was really speaking to was that core of me that already knew the truth, but really needed a little booster to bring it out. And I think people find it in different ways. So now when I teach about the muse, my biggest piece that I want to give people is go find the muse your way. Do you hear it in the trees when you're taking a walk and an idea will pop in? Do you go to a cathedral and hear music and suddenly your mind starts wandering and you see something in a different way? Do you just call it intuition? And when you're painting, like now I love to paint, I think you paint too, all of a sudden you go, no, it's got to be blue right now. And you don't know why it's blue, but it is. And is that just deep intuition, or do you feel like something is also coming through? So the muse for me has now become the holding ground for your deep connection with the creative force within you, for that sort of sacred intuition that we all carry. And part of our job is to listen and to figure out how it comes. And if people would like to have instruction on allowing another force to share some words and then capture that, I can certainly offer that, but that is just one way. When
Absolutely.
Gay, when you heard the words and it resonated with you, what did you think the muse was?
So I've had similar experiences where I'll sit down making time and space, and I'll just be able to write, like, and often and sometimes with a group of people, often with a group of people, like in the poetry group we were in years ago, and there'd be like a start or a keyword, there would be another poem read. And then I would just, it would be like there was a flow. There was a flow that just came out, and it was, I knew what to say. And also, I'm thinking of, well, there's more I can share, but I want to get back to your book. But I think it's that quiet voice within, and it's not often listened to in our society, where we have so much, we're creative doings, doing so much instead of creative beings. So that's part of what it means to me. But it was really the way you quoted the muses was just really, really resonated with me. So thank you for that.
The other thing I add to it for people is that if people think a muse is a little woo-woo, I would just say, do you think an inner critic is woo-woo? Because almost everybody I know can talk to you very easily about their inner critic and what that critic, kind of the nasty gibberish that it has to say about our creative work. So if an inner critic can live within us, why can't we have a benevolent force that's on the side of our soul's calling and wanting us to really express ourselves? So that's another
That's
way to just
beautiful.
say, it's a antidote to those other forces that most of us carry.
Awesome. That's beautiful. So, what was the hardest thing about writing the book?
When I started writing in the first person and it became a memoir, although I never really liked that word, but I think it's technically a memoir. Then there's the question of what about your life to keep in and what to leave out. And for the most part, that's self-sorted. But there was one chapter that was difficult, and that was writing about my sister, who's with whom I had a wonderful, troubled, interesting, loving relationship. And when she developed ovarian cancer, she said in so many words, she didn't want me writing about her. So I talked to my writing coach, my editor, and my editor said, Sally, it's okay. It's a story about you. You don't have to have that. And I tried, and so I took out all the stuff about my sister Nancy, except there were a couple portions that just didn't play right without acknowledging that was my sister. Because to say I was really shocked because a good friend of mine had ovarian cancer is like, it's watered down. It's nothing like the kick in the ass, throw you to your feet, leave you in prayer and sobbing when you find out that your sister is ill. And so at the very end of her life, I asked her for permission to include two references to her. They were more about me and how much I loved her, but it was important to speak her name or speak her, acknowledge she was my sister. So that was the hardest thing in the book because I both wanted to honor her and she's extremely private. But I also felt like the truth was that my relationship with her and the love I had for her was transformative, and I needed to say something about that.
Wow. Well, I was moved by that chapter, and yeah, the just the preciousness of life, and the days that we have. And you wrote about grief in other parts of your book as well, losing your horse, and so it was that hard.
Well, that wasn't, it wasn't, it wasn't. I, as you referenced, I wrote a chapter about losing my, actually, my second horse, which was one of the most nightmarish, just kick you to the ground experiences, maybe 15 years before I lost Nancy. And it really taught me that we don't control our lives in the way that we think we did. I mean, I would have given the world to have had that magic wand that resurrected my horse, and I didn't have it. And I realized we don't have it. And so, in writing the book, I had one early reader who told me, Sally, I just can't read this stuff on death. It's just too bummer or something. And I don't know exactly how she said it. I think she just didn't want to read it. And I thought, well, I don't think it's a bummer. I think it's actually rich. Just the way when you do a painting, you have those dark, dark purples and blacks and deep browns, and they then give you a background to put in the light colors and bring the animation into your painting. We need to acknowledge the fullness of life. And for those of us who are past 50 or 60 or 70, it's a no shit reality. We are losing people we love. So being able to wrap that in and acknowledge that that too is part of our creative process is it feels really important. And no, it's not all light, but it's not a bummer. It's not a bummer. And I don't think, I hope when you read that, it didn't feel like a bummer to you.
No. It reminded me of like in our poetry circle and learning about just feeling the poetry of the despair and the hope. It's both, and life is both, and my life is everything in between. And so to express that the way you did was really beautiful.
Yeah, it's complex. And I think one of my favorite expressions in the whole book is both and. That life, especially as we age, you can't say it's all one thing or another. You know, life is beautiful and life can be horrific. Life is joyful and life carries sorrow. And it's both. And as we age, we know that. And I happen to think that that also fuels our creative process because we don't have to deny anything. In fact, I have a singing teacher who loves to say, you can sound your way through any emotion. You can bring it all into your voice and let it go, just come through you. And so there's no sorrow too deep that music can't bear. And I love that.
Absolutely beautiful. So, what have you discovered that you might want to share in a second book?
The place where I'm going, and given it was actually quite a mountain to climb to write the book and get it published and stuff, so that I feel like I've had to live life and really throw myself into my art activities, which is a whole story in the book, how I came into art, and then talk to people like yourself about their creative lives. And so the question that I have is, how do we have a creative practice for life? What does it mean to be able to design our life to enhance that creative spirit? Is it rituals? Is it practices? Is it an intention? What can we share with each other about how we live day to day with that creative presence? So I felt the need to talk to people like you. And then I hope to be able to distill that into a slightly more functional guidebook.
Wow. I'm looking forward to
Yeah, me too. But it's
that.
right now, because it's also crazy. I think the other thing, Gay, and you know about this part, but I had never considered myself an artist. And then when I had this total post midlife epiphany, it changed my life. And being able to paint, being able to go to my studio, being able to create has been a great balancer for all the productive work and really thoughtful work that writing entailed. It's almost like there's a little voice in my brain, what be it the muse or something else, that says, come on, you need to tank up on your creative life force in some other ways. And then you get to go back and you can start, you know, putting it into a book again. But
And as soon as that came out of my mouth, I thought that exact same thing. It's like, be with the moment and be with what you are experiencing and growing
yeah.
before delving into another book.
Well,
And yeah.
yeah, let me ask you, because
Yeah.
one of the things, again, I love that you had a whole career in the sciences and in teaching, but you never, I mean, I knew you as a poet rather than as a science teacher, even though you talked about that. What has opened up for you after retiring from your teaching career? Did you know what you want to do, or were you a little bit lost for a while? Were there certain creative pastimes that you were just dying to explore, or did you want time to just figure out what they might be? What was that like for you?
Yeah, so I loved my teaching career passionately for many years. And as the years started to, like as the last couple of years, I realized that I really wanted to look inside myself and express myself in new ways, because I'd put my creative energy into teaching. which was wonderful. But then how to re-spark that spark. And so I just felt like there was so much to do, and there still is so much to do in retirement that is life-giving. And so one of the things that it's opened up is creating my own schedule. And when I first retired, it was like I don't want any schedules. I just want to be, and I want to be able to do the things that create my health, and going to yoga and those kind of things. But being involved with creative people in every aspect of my life is what I'm realizing is choosing to, yeah, I can choose what I commit to. People who knew me before I became a teacher, childhood friends, college friends who knew me as an artist, they've been like, okay, I'm going to do your art. And that's, one reason your book was so important is because it took me through that process of what I, where I was. And gardening, we created an amazing garden, which was great.
And can I just interrupt, because you may not realize, but you are giving our listeners gold in what you're saying. And so, first of all, that period that where you think that all you want to do is have a blank slate, but then you realize that to create, you have to have a container of some kind. You have to have some kind of schedule. You have to make certain commitments. So I like to tell people your life is your most creative work. And you are doing that. You are picking the things that give you life, and incorporating them in. And then the other thing that you put, which I think is so worth underscoring, is that you have surrounded yourself with a creative community. That, as you know, people in your past knew you as an artist, and then there was a whole period where you were known as a teacher. But now again, you have people who are fanning the flame of your artistic abilities, your writing abilities, your gardening abilities. And I think that is a real key piece for us, to have people who themselves carry the dream, who have that passion for creating. And then you can look out and go, oh man, that's how they do it, or that's how they schedule their lives, or I'm going to take that one from them, you know?
Absolutely. And your workshop that you gave right after your studio offered was wonderful too, because it was just to be able to play and explore. And as I mentioned, one of the
Can I just
things,
tell people who might not have had the
yeah, of
opportunity to be
course,
there?
of course.
As a first step in bringing the book into a different dimension, I offered a workshop called Embracing the Muse that was very much about play and also letting go of some of those messages that we carry. Because almost everybody in the circle carried something, you know, diminishing or belittling about our creative abilities. And to be able to get outside of it and say, you know, that was never real. That was just a message. It was just a story, but it was never real. So why am I hanging back for that one?
And the courage to create, and the courage to have a voice in many different aspects of our life. One of the things that a couple of friends told me about was the chorale, Vashon Chorale. And so
Yes.
that's been just so much fun and wonderful. And I hadn't read music in years.
It's a beautiful, professionally directed, because you have a conductor, group of very, very committed people who come together to sing every week, and then they give concerts.
It's a challenge. It's a challenge, and it's a joy. And I'm very, very thankful for that experience.
And it's with people, you know, so you get
Yes.
to open up in a context of community again.
And also, I was going to share something that happened yesterday that was just like so joyful. So I've been writing postcards to get out the vote with a group of women every couple of weeks. And so that group has expanded, and a woman who I've known for years, she organized it, and she brought two people who she had worked with in Pierce County for the detention group, and so people who are in jail for crimes that they didn't commit, and helping those families. And so these two women I met, who one was the wife of the man, and the other was the mother-in-law. And so it was to hear their story and have them tell their story as we were writing these postcards, and to realize the work that Barbara was doing was huge. And then we had lunch afterwards, and we just like laughed, we connected, we, you know, it was awesome.
You know, it's the healing power of telling stories in community. And
Yes.
again, it's too much to say right now, but I did a whole performance monologue about a woman who was from Cambodia and had seen horrors we can't even talk about. But she would get together and quilt with her Cambodian friends, and they were able to heal each other because they would listen. They could speak to the horrors sometimes. They understood each other. They didn't judge. And then they'd laugh and then they'd quilt and eat some food. And I think that's the role that stories play. They
Absolutely.
are creative, but they're also can be really healing. And how great that you experienced that while also helping to get out the vote. I know, having been a teacher for 30 years in this in the Vashon community, that there are a lot of people who know you and who were your students. Now, if one were to run into you on the street and that person you liked and they had a certain maturity about them, what would you say would be different about you now if they asked?
Well, it's fun. I do run into former students actually quite often, and I run into former parents, you know, too. I would just say that I'm I've always felt incredibly blessed. But just that I'm really listening to that that inner voice, and connecting with others, and being open to my creative journey.
Wonderful, and I'm sure that will inspire them. I'm talking today with Gay Rozelle about creativity after midlife, and we're sharing some of the themes from my book, Meeting the Muse After Midlife: A Journey to Meaning, Creativity, and Joy. Gay, you and I have had an opportunity to chat a little bit about aging and how one may actually become more creative. So I'm interested in your experience, more creative after midlife. I also love that you have taken some of the quotes from the book to heart and applied them to your life. And I wondered if you might share a little of that.
Yes, absolutely. And one of them, it starts out earlier in your book, and the quote is from a muse that has come into your life named Isabel, who's a 95-year-old woman, 85-year-old woman. And it says, "Beauty is what stirs your soul. Let it pull you forward, even when the path feels too dark." And I think that's such a beautiful quote, and it can lead us through our life and whatever changes we're going through, and whatever darkness there might be in our own lives, in the world, in the country, but to keep that alive. And I think having the courage to do that, to look at the beauty amidst any darkness, is really helpful. And
Yeah, I need that too, especially
yeah.
things are always getting dark. Just when you think that, oh, we're getting it together, then a hurricane hits or some election problem hits and it goes dark again. So thank you for bringing that back.
Yes, absolutely. And you had mentioned intention and also having rituals, and I think that is incredibly important. And I think of the intention as like a compass, and so helping to point that direction, to be a solid ground beneath all of this, and the intention to see beauty.
Yeah, I thank you for bringing that because in the early parts of our lives, you know, a lot of times we're told to focus on goals. smart goals that are measurable and specific and time bound and all that good stuff. And those still can be useful. But nowadays, having intention seems so much more powerful because intention is, like you said, it's the directions setter. You can always come back to it. It doesn't tell you specifically what you have to do, but it is your North Star, your guiding light.
Yes, exactly. And the other thing is when we are inspired by other people like yourself, and this book has inspired me so much, what happens is where there's two or more, there's this energy that can help propel us into positive actions. And there's a quote that you had on page 51. It says, "In the face of what I am losing, I am grateful for what I still have." That is key to what we carry throughout our lives.
And I also think that that's a key, at least for me, it was a key in the context of aging, because we do lose capacities and don't want to delude anybody that we don't. And the world also expands, which is pretty amazing.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that time, I was thinking about this because sometimes I feel like time is my enemy because it goes by so quickly. But time is a gift. And within this time, when I'm recharting my life, it's such a gift to have the time. But as we get older, how many more years do we have? We don't know. And with our loved ones and with our partners and people that we care about. Here's another quote that I love. Okay, when people work on a project that fully engages them, they can enter an elevated state of timeless absorption called flow. And so I think that was something that you taught when you were a coach, and but it rings true.
And I know that you're also a great nature lover. You have a passion for the environment, and for many of us, that's often where we pick up our flow. We go out, and nature sweeps us away, and for a few moments, we notice beauty, and the watch stops. We're caught in that world, and it's so restorative.
And yeah, it's incredible. And being on this island, I feel so blessed. But I'm so thankful to the Vashon Nature Center for providing the kids, when I was teaching the last 10 years, providing working together and providing opportunities for them to be outdoors. And also those opportunities continue with them through a variety of different opportunities. So I'm also going through the transition of from teaching others to the path of inner knowing. And one of the quotes that you had was, "Follow the trail of what you love and let the rest emerge. Let that be purpose enough to keep going. Find joy in what you do and you'll find your way. Give yourself time and honor the unknown."
Thank you for bringing that back. I'm sitting here thinking I have to listen to my own words or the words that came through the muses for me because they're ever relevant today.
Absolutely.
What do you think the most challenging part of living a creative life after midlife is for you?
I think just coming to terms with my own things that I'm getting in the way of, such as perfectionism, which I'm learning to let go of. And so the ability to play at any age is really helpful.
Yeah, that's a big one. That's a big one because play is such an anchor for our creative life. And in our professional lives, a lot of times we were kind of taught that we had to be perfect or very excellent in everything we did. And the creative, artistic, musical, imaginative life doesn't work like that. It loves play.
Absolutely. And even earlier in my life, I remember there was a friend of mine who he dumped me upside down and he held me by the feet and he goes, "You need to loosen up. You need to play a little more."
That's a little
And
brutal. That would be like terrifying. You've got to play. You have to relax. Yeah. Funny.
it was taken well. So yeah, and one of the things that I haven't done, well, I actually that's not true. I guess improvisation is something that I can explore again, more so. And so I really appreciate your, you know, what you were sharing with that. I also wanted to share more on the aging thing. One of the quotes you had, or the, I guess it was on the mature mind.
It's a great book by a psychologist and geriatrician named Jean Cohen, who
Yes.
actually believed that things could get better as we age.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I'll read the quote from him. Contrary to societal myths, creativity is hardly the exclusive province of youth. It can blossom at any age, and in fact, it can bloom with more depth and richness in older adults because it is informed by their vast stores of knowledge and experience. Another thing you talked about was someone talking about from role to soul. And I really see that happening, you know, as you mentioned, when we're in our earlier stages of life and we're very driven and we're playing a role and we have a lot of people that we're working with, and then going to what fills our mind, body, soul, and spirit. But what is it that is soul work that we're doing?
I
And
love
I'd love.
that. Yeah, and I want to underscore that one because you're making me think about it in a new way. In the early part of our careers, when you think about a sort of an artistic life, if you think of it from role, then you want to go around saying, I am a writer or I am an artist, and with all the trappings that you think go with that role. However, that can be so burdensome and that has nothing to do with creating. Whereas from a soul perspective, it's like, I don't care what you call yourself. Go paint, go write, go play, go experiment. That's what matters. It's the engagement, not the
Yes.
trappings. And that can be totally liberating because, you know, especially for those of us who never called ourselves a writer or an artist, to say that doesn't knock us out of the game. We can play our hearts out because it's soul work. It's not role work.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and to nurture that. And I like what you said, in response to some of those things you were sharing. It says, although my ruminations may have sounded philosophical to some, I consider them to be very practical. My body was going to decline, that was a given, and my mind might as well, but my soul and spirit could continue to expand if I nurtured them.
Bingo. And you know, the whole book is a story. It's my story. But if that, the essence of that quote is really the essence of the key to aging, at least in my mind, because the reality is that we're getting older, our bodies decline, we lose our friends, our hearts get broken. That's just truth. And from a material perspective, we do decline. But from a soul spiritual perspective, we never have to. That's where, if we feed our imagination, if we develop our sense of play, if we abound in curiosity, if we engage with what gives us joy, then we keep soaring. And we can do that well into the 90s to the end of our lives. So for me, that's why I wanted to rush out and say, hey guys, wake up. You know, the creative life is like the ticket.
Yep, exactly. And some of the gifts, may I share some of the gifts that you stated from your book? I was happier with my appearance than in my late 20s. I kept learning new words, spurred on by my desire to write. The intuitive part of my mind was blossoming. I noticed more details in nature, even in our backyard. And I spent a lot of time looking over the first part of your book, which is incredible. And here's a few more things. I had wisdom to offer my clients based on my experience, if not my tech expertise. I could experience time more fully, more present. I could let go of some false ideas about myself. I could release the idea that I'd ever be perfect or transformed. I felt less need to achieve and more delight in what I created. I was less angry and more grateful. So one of the things I'm going to share with you is giving up a professional identity, and I feel like that happened early in my retirement. And this is a quote by Marco, who is one of your muses. What he says is, "We are all creators, pulled forward by the faint call of our next assignment. Walking a creative path challenges the part of us that has to know where we are going. But to create art or life, we have to risk the unknown. A cold wind invigorates as the angels cheer." And that just gives me the chills. It's really, really beautiful. I don't know if that's a good place to
That might be a
end.
great place to, and also to give me a moment to just thank you hugely, because it is such a gift to a writer to feel like you're being read, but not only read, but gotten. And not only gotten, but when you told me that the book was inspiring your creative life forward and inspiring you through this, still in transition from your years of teaching, that is like gold. That's like being a bestseller without having to sell a ton of books, because that's, I think that is what every writer strives for, to be able to feel like maybe you could contribute in some small way to someone else.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And thank you so much, Sally. And when I was reading each chapter, it would resonate with something in me, either going on now or something that I was looking forward to, or something. Just yeah, each chapter resonated. And it's the full spectrum of life that you shared in your book. So
Yeah.
thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon 101.9 FM for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.